This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
Joining us at the present time, Joe Geruso, New Orleans City Council District A member. A lot of issues to talk about. Joe, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Newell. I was glad to hear that I wasn't the only one who was tired after the storming and the alert last night.
Well, this has been like two nights in a row. I mean, it's like I've had enough of this already.
I'm with you because I got woken up, plus I'm sure everybody else. You have the dog that wakes up in the middle of the night, the phone that wakes you up. So trust me, we're all there together.
Yeah, and just thankfully no one was seriously hurt. Little property damage, some power outages, and hopefully we'll get all of that back up and running in very short order. Joe, let's jump right into it. There was an article about a report that was done on the turbine explosion that was seemed to point to operator error. Y'all were led to believe that it was a mechanical failure. I know you head up the committee that looks at that. Have y'all had an opportunity to review same, and if so, what has it revealed?
So, yes, the answer is we did take a look at it, and one of the things that we did a couple of years ago was actually hire an engineer, both for Sewage and Water Board and for energy as well, because there's a lot of issues that we get called upon to opine, and obviously we want to make sure that we have it right. And so everybody knows, yes, there was T5 that exploded. And the initial cause was said to be mechanical failure. The way that the report reads from ABS, which studied this afterwards, seems to have a series of failures, mechanical, and one of which is a human error as well. One of the manual issues was exacerbated by improper manual operations of the fuel gas supply, and then this is where the issue is, especially if the valve was opened too late in the sequence. I think the one thing, Newell, and I'm going to use legal terminology in a scientific way, but based on the research that was done so far, I know that there are a bunch of intervening causes, but I haven't seen what the superseding cause is. And so right. By that I mean there's a bunch of things that led to it, but I can't sit here and tell you, well, was it the mechanical issue that happened here that is more important than the human issue that happened there? And look, like all of these things, we want to make sure the human error is eliminated as much as possible. You may also remember, and I'm not saying this to berate Sewage and Water Board, but as a way to move past it and do better, a few weeks ago, Pump Station 12, they were pumping water the wrong way. It was pumping from the lake back into the city. Well, now there's a process in place for the operators to have better operational awareness of that and to prevent that from happening. So T4, and also while we're talking about it, Turbine 4 is supposed to come online this week and hopefully Turbine 5 in mid-June.
So does this investigation or review continue? Because there are a number of things that I want to talk to you about that flow from this that I was very surprised to hear that just doesn't make much sense to me, as it relates to the findings of what actually happened here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think the answer is they have this initial report based on the review that was done so far. I'm not sure, and actually David Hammer may have talked about this too, whether or not they are going to do a full root cause analysis of what's happened, but they have identified factors including control system settings, exceeding operational limits, and apparently that was part of the things that Sewage and Water Board asserted. The control system and instrumentation has been evaluated and apparently repaired months before the incident. So, you know, I think what you're getting to, I think, is when something happens, diagnosing what happened, having, for lack of a better word, a post-mortem on it, and then making sure, A, we're clear with the public about what went wrong, and then B, ensuring it doesn't happen again, right?
Right.
I mean, mistakes happen all the time. It's about correcting the mistake and then ensuring we don't repeat history.
Yeah. I mean, I was just surprised to learn that in the aftermath of this, that there wasn't a checklist that the operators worked off of, because if there's a sequencing procedure that has to take place, you can't put the cart before the horse, otherwise there are disastrous outcomes. Not unlike a pilot that gets into a cockpit, you know, there's a checklist of items that you go through. I was just surprised to hear that, you know, multi-million dollars of pieces of equipment that we're not training folks with a checklist and doing mock training and exercises as to how to react to certain challenges that we know specifically, that really the superseding event here is always a power failure, right? Because if there's a power failure, you're required to go out there and produce your own power. So, I mean, that one's fairly apparent, but what happens from that point forward in prepping your very expensive machinery to be able to supply power is, I think, the key ingredient and the most important question of all.
Yeah, I think, Newell, we see it across so many of the utilities, right? Like, let's take Sewage and Water Board out for just a second. Remember what just happened with the power shedding event on Mardi Gras night. It was disconcerting is probably the nicest word I can use, that there were these tabletop exercises that were run, and yet power was shut off unnecessarily because the computers weren't programmed correctly, and Sewage and Water Board's power supplies were not listed right. And in the same boat, you're right, too, about Sewage and Water Board. And I think one of the things sometimes I struggle with in management is I can't believe I have to reduce to writing a policy about A because A should be so well known or everybody knows it's standard operating practice. But when it comes to particularly, I think, operating of these old machines and old equipment, we do better to have something that is you know, fail safe, and that if you know you follow procedure 1 through 5, that you're in good shape.
Yeah, I mean, I hear that, Joe, but quite frankly, I mean, you know, no matter how old a machine or how new a machine is, there's always a sequencing issue, you know, A, B, C, D, E. And,
right.
You know, I mean, so, and I made the observation is that if it's having individuals that have more informal education about this type of equipment, the operations of this type of equipment, a comfort level with this type of equipment, wouldn't that be the best money spent ever for this system to make sure and ensure that we have qualified people? Because it seems to me like they didn't have any succession planning in place either. You know, a couple of guys leave with all of the institutional knowledge, no plan.
Yeah, I mean, that's been one of our big issues for a long time is what does the succession planning look like? It's great that you have people who've been at Sewage and Water Board for 3 or 4 decades, but then they leave and all of that institutional knowledge walks out the door. What are you going to do to supplement that? And we can talk all day long about getting a new substation there or about getting new turbines, but a lot of this equipment is old and there needs to be very clear planning and manuals for how to use them so people don't make mistakes based on lack of knowledge. I think you're right about that, and I know we've been trying to push that processes on better communication with infrastructure, how that works, processes, even Newell on like the part ordering. How are you getting from A to B on ordering equipment and what that looks like? There's an even older ABS report. This is not the first one Suge and Waterbrook right. has. On just the process of ordering the parts that you need, when you need them, when you know something's going to reach natural obsolescence. And I think what you're also saying is obviously you can't have a manual for certain things, right? Like somebody's sure. performing surgery or practicing law. There are some good practices, but you have to have a level of care and ability to kind of change things up. When it comes to engineering, it's much more black and white, and you want to make sure that people have the right ways to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we'll be right back with Joe Geruso, New Orleans City Council Member, District A, talking about a number of issues going on in the city. We'll be right back. Stay with us, folks. We're back. We're talking to Joe Geruso, New Orleans City Council District A member, and we've been talking about the situation at the Sewage and Water Board. Joe, I just wanted to follow up, and you made a point, and I was going to be headed there, about the hearings with Entergy and the indignation that was, articulated by any number of council folks as it relates to human error and the mistakes that they made. But I just don't see that same sense of exigency and indignation when we're talking about the Sewage and Water Board in this turbine incident. And, you know, you talk about the previous ABS report, and I'm curious because my understanding is that a number of the observations in that first report have yet to be implemented.
Yeah, well, I would say that Sewage and Water Board is probably not always happy with the direction that I take the meetings, because we do try and hold their feet to the fire on a number of different issues, and I've been trying to refocus them on sort of two or three things sort of generally, right? So number one is power, because as you pointed out, if we have no power, and as we went through the energy situation of Councilmember Moreno, we have to have power to make things run, and we risk imperiling everything. Two, the billing system, and I will tell you, I know in particular Representative Hilferty has been working on this. It hasn't changed. It's been 5 years. They implemented a new system, and let me be very clear about all of this, right? I say this every time, but I feel like I need to issue the same disclaimer. The leadership team, this administration inherited a series of problems that they didn't create, but now we have to work to fix it. And the billing remains still an issue for constituents, and my staff on every Monday meets with Sewage and Water Board staff about it, and dealing with the infrastructure as well. And I think, you know, one of the things I really want to work towards is not only what are the right processes to get things done, but also to make sure as we're looking at allocating additional money to infrastructure, which is sorely needed, how that money is spent and what the highest and best uses are. And certainly making sure that there is still the attention on these issues is incredibly important. And Newell, you know, I've said this to my neighborhood groups, like, you know, the best thing you all can do is to make noise and to try and be heard on this issue and other issues. And, you know, we have the public meetings and a couple people show up, and, you know, I have probably 4, 5, 6 emails every single day from constituents who either have a new billing problem or a recurring one. And that's not even counting, obviously, all the people who just aren't reporting to us or to other council members what's going on. So
talked to a lady the other day, got an $800 water bill for the fourth time.
Yeah. I mean,
only person living in the house. She goes, I don't know where to go next. She goes, I fear that they're going to turn my water off, so I'm paying them the money. But I'm one person living in a home.
And some of it is, I just don't understand why Sewage and Water Board in some issues does not refuse to you know, change some of their thinking. I'll give you like one example. You know, after COVID, obviously things were difficult, didn't have enough meter readers, but we got off the regular scheduled readings. So some people were getting bills for 15 days, some people for 45 days. Like, can we just agree to go to a 28 to 32 day billing cycle? Period. End of sentence. Like, just full stop right there. And then Sewage and Water Board actually has some really robust policies on what happens when you report, what's going on. Let's look at just what is happening following the policies, and can you show that that's being done? If Mrs. Smith calls about her bill, walk me through the process and show each step of the way what's happening. So we have our quarterly report that's due this Friday, and then we have our public works meeting due next month. And, we've been told by Sewage and Water Board that by the June meeting, there will be significant improvements to both billing and to how infrastructure is handled. And I expect to see what those are.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big concern for a lot of folks is no matter how much money we spend as a result of these new dollars coming in from the Fed on infrastructure, if management of same is not improved upon in the policies, the procedures, the operational plans, it's a spend that's all for naught.
I've gotten into some heated discussions with people who are very interested in getting this done, who just see it as a resource problem. And I agree, we have to have the money. It's a chicken or egg thing. You have to have the money to fix some of these things. But at the same time, we can't afford to let the money slip through our fingers. And I think we need to ensure sort of two things. One is what are the highest and best needs for Sewage and Water Board right now? And if you're asking me the two or three things I think that could be turned around with, you know, relatively modest amount of money in a short period of time, getting the substation for power up and running as soon as possible. And of course, you know, with the fair share money, Turbine 7 will be online in a couple of years. And then two, Sewage and Water Board has been saying, you know, if we had $30, $40, $50 million, we could implement the advanced meter infrastructure and we can do that. Well, if that is going to be a major silver bullet to the billing problem, let's focus our efforts there. So I'm looking forward to trying to get to those solutions and making sure that we're spending money not only in the right places, but that it's being tracked the right way so people don't just think it's going sideways and they aren't seeing value.
Joe, we got a caller who's worked for the Sewage and Water Board for 30 years or so, wants to make a comment. Go ahead, sir.
Hi. I worked 38 years for the Sewage and Water Board of New Orleans, and I have very, really good knowledge of the drainage stations, sewage pumping stations. And when you say someone allowed a pump to pump backwards, they pumped the water backwards, that's not even a possibility of a pump. Now, when you turn off a pump, there's an automatic vacuum breaker that would trip out, and it would stop that pump from siphoning backwards. And so what I'm saying is this could have been a mechanical failure and not so much an operator failure for that to happen.
But, Ricky, if my memory serves me correct, the report revealed that it actually was pumping water back in from the lake into the interior of the levee system.
That will happen.
And whether or not that hydraulic backflow preventer failed or not, obviously somebody needs to be checking it as it relates to which way the pump is spinning, right?
Right. I understand that. And the only way you can tell that is the suction level starts going up and you start investigating to see why. So
sure, because the pressure in the system is going to change, right?
That is correct. But if you're not standing at the pump at the time, it's hard to realize that. The other thing is
let me ask you this question: knowing that that's a possibility, yes, or it's the potential of that happening exists. When you bring the pump down and it's going back up, wouldn't it be a best practice to have actually somebody eyes on the pump?
Yes, yes, that would be a good practice.
Okay, so why can't we do that? Why we don't have enough personnel? And that's what I've been saying all along. I mean, our best investment is to make sure that we've got the adequate personnel, the adequate training, to make sure that these millions upon millions of dollars of equipment are actually managed and handled properly for all of these potential eventualities, because we know that they've happened before. Right?
I agree. I agree.
Okay.
Yes, we need more personnel. The only other thing I wanted to mention was there still is a program where if someone's getting ready to retire and we're losing a lot of experience, they usually go on to a drop program, which is a deferred retirement option plan for 5 years. So that is in place. Why it's not being used
in place, that's a retirement system, but as you point out, once you go into the drop, that's a pretty good indication to management that you're on your way to retiring, so you would want to put in place the safeguards relative to succession planning, because this person's leaving, right?
That is correct, yes.
And that's not what's being done.
That is correct. Well, I can't answer why that's not being done, but it is.
Well, let me ask you this question. When you left, did they do that?
Well, the reason why I was went on drop and what I was explained to me is so I could train someone to take over for me when I left.
Did you train someone?
That's why. Yes, I did.
Okay. And for how?
Quite a few people.
All right.
For 5 years.
Well, that's good news.
5 years. Yes. So when I left, I felt as though the Sewage Water Board is in really good shape. There was some, in my opinion, money grabbing going on afterwards. I don't want to accuse anyone, but, you know, a lot of money disappeared from the Sewage Water Board.
What year did you leave?
I left 4 years ago.
Okay. All
right. And when I left, money kind of disappeared, let's say.
All right. Well, thanks for the call, Ricky. We appreciate the insight. Any comments, Joe?
Well, look, I think it's the hard part of what you're asking, Ricky, which is people who work there and feel like they do things the right way want people to know that they've worked hard and that they're doing the best that they can. I think the point, though, that you're making is twofold. Number one, when it comes to mechanical issues, we just can't have water backing up and coming into the city. And frankly, we dodged a bullet on that one by making sure that people's homes, cars weren't flooded because of that. And, you know, and secondly, while it's great that Ricky was training people, I think all of us need to have succession planning, particularly when it comes to things that involve older equipment and making sure people know how to do the job when they come there.
Yeah. Joe, I want to pivot to another issue. You and I have talked about this. You've expressed frustration relative to employment numbers within the NOPD, who is actually assigned where, when, why, how. You've expressed frustration in getting that information. And recently, only as a result of a public records request, we find out that there are similar issues with EMS. And calls for ambulances that are going unanswered, as many as 300 in a week that go unanswered. I know y'all saw this report. I would assume you saw this report. Has there been any follow-up on this issue? And why is it that, but for a public records request, no one knows, or we haven't really had a lot of conversation about the strained resources of EMS?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to why we haven't heard the strained resources per se on EMS, and I feel
like.
Do you
intend to ask? I mean,
yes. Well, here's what's coming up. Right, is we're getting ready to get this influx of federal money, and one of the questions I asked and want to make sure is that we have what I call the mini budget season, because when we put the budget together at the end of the year, it's over $1 billion, and we spend 3 weeks essentially going through everything. This is $375 million. And so we have to be extraordinarily smart about how we use the money and what we're planning for. And you know, look, when I think all of us, think we hear the word public safety and almost reflexively and instinctively we go towards police. But public safety is also safety and permits, code enforcement, EMS. And if people aren't and fire, of course. And if we're not responding to you know, people who are calling in distress, right? Because that's what you get when somebody calls an ambulance. We need to look at that. And I've said, you know, look, I've said the same thing about the police, not only in terms of, you know, beefing up the numbers, which is always sort of a national issue, but I've always been worried about more of the investigative units as well, because, and you correct me if I'm wrong about this, but one of the things that that shows, particularly for homicide or special victims units, is your clearance rate. And if that clearance rate is really low, that means your ability to arrest somebody or track it down, it sends a bad message that that you can essentially get away with a crime, and that you don't have enough, going back to our earlier conversation, enough experienced people helping to do the work. So, yes, the answer is, when it comes to public safety, whether it's water or EMS, police, safety and permits, yes, we're gonna dig deep on that.
Yeah, I mean, I just asked because it would seem to me that this should rise to the same level of concern as the approach with Entergy. I mean, because you have people that are sitting at home that have called for an ambulance service, and what really struck me is that the head of the EMS said they do callbacks in order to find out how they're doing now, but they never really tell them you're probably not going to have an ambulance show up. So, you know, maybe you should put yourself in an automobile and get your butt to a hospital. I mean, as I read through this, some of this conversation that was reported by Fox 8, I was like, wow. I mean, I just can't imagine why we're not all over this. I mean, you know, you have as much as 20% of the calls go unanswered.
Yeah, well, I will tell you, I will say that my experience has been sharpened by the fact that people care deeply about issues that affect their pocketbook or about public safety, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I went to the Bayou where there were two carjackings a couple of weeks ago, and there were probably close to 100 people there. I've mentioned this before. I remember seeing you at Heinz before COVID, and there were, 700, 800 people, maybe 1,000 in that room. When it comes to public safety, that's what people want to know. And look, when I go to my neighborhood meetings and there is a crime issue, you're not getting off the hook by giving a 2 or 3 word answer. People want to know what's going on, what's happening.
Let's take a break and let's pick up there when we come back, if you don't mind.
Okay.
We're talking with Joe Geruso, New Orleans City Council District A, and we'll talk about crime coming up next. Stay with us. A recent Wallet Hub study says that the state of Louisiana is the fourth worst state for police officers. 50th, which is bottom. Doesn't get any lower than that. Medium income for law enforcement officers, 30th for medium income growth, 46th violent crime rate, 36% percentage of homicide cases solved that Mr. Geruso was just talking about, 23rd state and local police protection expenses per capita, and 48th as it relates to police deaths per 1,000 officers. Only two other states have a worse record than we do as it relates to safety for our officers. And, you know, the NOPD responds to 396,000 calls for service in a year. Joe, the reason I talk about that, it's National Police Week, and I know just this past week we had what I think was a huge mistake on the part of the Audubon Zoo. Wanted to find out what your reaction to it was, canceling a pro-police promotion of Back the Blue, which is simply a 20% discount on services, entry fee, and, you know, stuff you buy there. And they canceled it because some people were offended by backing a police officer. And, you know, my history. We don't need to go through that. But the fact of the matter is, if you can't support your own agencies, who can you support?
Well, I was surprised to see the news. I mean, I don't think supporting the police or fire or EMS or anybody else per se is something that people should get upset about. And I think what's happening is we're allowing issues to become conflated unnecessarily. When I go to my neighborhood meetings, particularly in my black neighborhoods, I don't hear from anybody, we want to see the police less. What I hear is I want crime under control, and I want to make sure we're all safe and that things are done well. The fact that we need to work more on some reform issues, and there's things, as you just pointed out, that hopefully we could get the police out of doing, you know, 396,000 calls for service strikes me as a ton, has nothing to do with saying, hey, thanks, we know you have a hard job, you know, you're putting yourself in harm's way to help serve. And, my preference is we take a deep breath with some of these things, and rather than being at one extreme or the other, we operate with more nuance.
You know, the council collectively has expressed displeasure at any number of different things, even issues that are going on in other parishes. Is there an intention to express displeasure relative to the action that was taken by the Audubon Zoo?
I don't know about that, and I will just tell you, I think, as I've said, unless it is something that is trying to get money for somebody that we have to do, or I'm trying to think of another instance, you know, there's rarely ones where I try and bring a ton of resolutions, because I've said this, I think, either on your show last time or the time before that. My job is to pass laws, right? Like, literally the root for legislators, legis, which means law. And that means to me zoning and legal issues and the budget, and obviously using the bully pulpit where we need to. But I always get worried about a lot of resolutions because, again, as you and I discussed last time, you can be on one side and it seems like it's one thing, but when the audience flips or the issue flips, then is it something that you want to be advocating for?
We're running out of time, Joe, but real quick, I wanted to ask this last question. Obviously, with the seven kids, the incident the other day with the chase, they obviously were given the authority to chase. They got their hands around these kids that were wreaking havoc on the streets of New Orleans. It seems to have brought a heightened scrutiny to a lot of things that are going on inside of the system because of the frustration expressed by Chief Sean Ferguson, and he's done that for a while. What do you think the council's reaction is going to be to all this?
Well, you're giving me the opportunity to give you a little teaser. Councilmember Banks and I have an op-ed that you should be seeing in the paper very soon, and that is one of the issues we were addressing.
All right. Well, we'll have you back on to talk about that. Look forward to reading the op-ed because it seems to me that this needs to be certainly a heightened focus. As always, thank you for not ducking any of the questions. We really appreciate it. Joe Geruso, New Orleans City Council Member, District A. Have a great week.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All righty, man. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.